I'm John Satcher, the Associate Chair of the History Department at the University of Central Florida, and you're listening to Rich's Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Rich's Documentary Podcast. Rich's, the regional initiative for collecting the history, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Rich's seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, Harry T. Moore, in an interview with Dr. Jim Clark, Angelou Powell focuses on Dr. Jim Clark's contribution to revitalizing the Moore's legacy during the 1980s and the early 1990s as an editor for the Orlando Sentinel.
My name is Anjali Powell, and joining me today is Dr. Jim Clark. Dr. Clark was one of the first people to popularize the story of civil rights leader Harry T. Moore during the late 1980s and early 1990s. Dr. Clark discovered the incredible story of Harry T. Moore while working as an editor for the Orlando Sentinel. Dr. Clark will give a detailed background on his time at the Sentinel and the rediscovery of one of America's great civil rights leaders. For our audience, can you please introduce yourself?
My name is Jim Clark. I am currently the publisher of Winter Park Magazine. Before that, I was publisher of Orlando Magazine. And before that, I was at the Orlando Sentinel for 21 years as an editor and came down to Florida in 1976.
Harry T. Moore seems to be one of the lost civil rights leaders in terms of national recognition. How did you discover the story of Harry T. Moore?
In the early 1980s, someone mentioned Harry T. Moore, and I was embarrassed that I had never heard of him, and told this phenomenal story about Harry T. Moore and his murder, and I went to the library at the Orlando Sentinel, went through some very old, dusty newspaper clips, and found the stories that had been written about Moore.
In what ways did you pursue the research on the Moores after you got your PhD?
I think one of the things that interested me throughout this was Florida in the 1940s, a largely unexamined period in the state's history, the impact of the war, the tremendous growth, but also the violence of the Klan. So you really had these two faces of Florida. You also had some groundbreaking things going on that people, I'm not sure, understood at the time, but everyone knows about Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in the major leagues. But very few people know that it had a tremendous impact in Florida in terms of integration, because organized baseball let it be known, if you're not going to make room for African-American players, we may go somewhere else. So I think lots of things are happening. So my doctorate focused on mostly politics, but Florida in that decade of the 1940s.
After receiving his PhD from the University of Florida, Dr. Clark continued his research on the Moores, which would eventually lead to his 1994 article, Civil Rights Leader Harry T. Moore and the Ku Klux Klan in Florida. Dr. Clark explains the impact the Moores' murder had on the African American community and the influence of the Klan in Florida.
I think people were really surprised, even shocked. I think that they were stunned to learn that the Orange County Sheriff, Dave Starr, was a Klansman. And here you had this strange situation where people were being beaten or worse by the Klan, and people would go to the sheriff to complain, not realizing that the sheriff was one of the people involved, that he knew what was going on. I think that because the focus was largely on places like Alabama and Mississippi, beginning in the 1950s, people were unaware that there was violence of this magnitude in Florida. They thought that Florida had largely escaped that kind of violence. But instead, Florida turns out to be one of the most violent states in the country. The Popka Klan was known far and wide as the most violent in the country. So this really was a hotbed of Klan activity and violence.
While violence against African Americans was common in the South, Florida was a unique case in that the major industry, citrus, was relying on African American labor. As the Morris campaign for equality began to gain momentum, many white business owners worried about losing their labor force. Dr. Clark describes the interrelation between Klan violence and citrus production.
I think one of the things that surprised me was coming to an understanding, really, of the role of the Klan. I had always assumed that the job of the Klan was to try to, if you will, drive out African Americans. The role of the Klan, especially in Orange County and in Lake County, was to keep blacks down. That generation of African Americans coming back from the war who didn't want to go pick oranges, who didn't want to work in the fields, who wanted something better. The Klan's role was to intimidate, to threaten, to harm, to keep these people picking oranges. Much of the violence of leading to the murder of Harry T. Moore simply involved picking oranges. And the efforts by law enforcement officials, such as Sheriff Willis McCall in Lake County, to keep a workforce in the fields picking oranges.
For many Americans, Florida represented a vacation paradise, immune from the harsh realities of racism in the 1940s. However, for the African American communities in Florida, many faced the same bigotry and violence that was associated with states like Alabama and Mississippi. Dr. Clark describes the dichotomy between Florida's tourist image and the reality many Africans faced during the 1940s and 50s.
The historical image of Florida is one of hotels in Miami Beach or snowbirds coming down for vacations. And so much of the history of things like the Harry T. Moore case have simply been lost, that people don't realize what was happening, that we present a picture to the world of a sun and fun place, and much of our history is based on that. And so I think that we forget that Florida was part of the South and went through the same ordeal that the rest of the South went through. And so I think it's important to keep the memory of people like Harry T. Moore alive, whether it's rebuilding his home or naming a building after him or articles and books commemorating him, so that people know what happened in Florida, so that it doesn't get glossed over and people say, nope, that didn't happen here.
As the Moore story began to gain notoriety in the late 1980s, many local residents were stunned to hear of the active Klan activities in Central Florida. Dr. Clark discusses the varied reactions he encountered while working at the Orlando Sentinel on the Harry T. Moore story.
There were several people who had no idea this was happening, and there was skepticism. Editors got some calls from people in Apopka saying, no, this couldn't be happening, this is wrong. But on the other hand, I got a number of calls from people. The one I remember the most was a woman who said that every Wednesday night, her father would have dinner with the family, go upstairs, get a bowling bag, and leave and say, going out to meet the guys for bowling. And as she read these articles, she began to piece things together. And it suddenly dawned on her, after 40 years, there was no bowling alley in Apopka. And her father couldn't have been going bowling. And what he was doing was going to a Klan meeting. And sure enough, her father's name was in the raw data, and he was one of the most violent Klansmen there was. And all of a sudden, after all these years, this daughter finds out that her father was one of the leaders of the violence of this period.
As part of the growing preservation acts during the 1990s, Dr. Clark donated the uncensored FBI files on the Moore's murder to the University of Central Florida. Dr. Clark describes how he obtained these unique documents.
I went up to the state attorney's office, Norm Wolfinger, and he had inherited all these files, and I was going to file a request under open records law, which would have made these FBI files public record. He wasn't going to fight that, so he said, sure, go ahead and look at them. I went up to his office in Sanford, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And I remember just starting to Xerox as fast as I can, because I was afraid somebody was going to walk in the middle and say, "We're from the FBI, we're taking our papers back." And so I just copied as much as I could and came back to Orlando with what I had. When I had finished the newspaper articles, I donated them to the University of Central Florida, not only as a civil rights case, but also giving people for the first time the ability to look at raw FBI files.
Over the last several decades, the Moores have continued to represent strength and equality for a generation of Central Florida residents. As time goes on, those who remember the Moores have begun an oral legacy which keeps the Moores' memory alive. Their consistent courage and unshakable tenacity has been an inspiration for Central Florida residents. Through local preservation efforts and a resurgence of national interest, the Moores have become a key part of the history of the civil rights movement. Dr. Clark places the importance of the Moores' contribution within the context of Central Florida's history.
I think Moore was so very far ahead of his time. This is an amazing thing, I think, that he was 10, 20, 30 years ahead of the rest of the country. He was saying things beginning in the 1930s that Martin Luther King would be saying 20 years later and drawing national attention. He was challenging the system in an era where no one else was challenging the system. The court cases that led to Brown versus Board of Education, the ruling in 1954, mostly are post-war cases. Here you had Harry T. Moore in the 1930s making court challenges, something that no one else was doing, and certainly not an African-American in the South. So I think that Harry T. Moore was unfortunately largely forgotten beacon for civil rights in this country.
As a leading expert in Florida history, Dr. Clark was a key factor in the resurgence of interest in the Moores. His investigative journalism during his time at the Orlando Sentinel, coupled with his postdoctoral work, exposed a new generation to the Moores' legacy. Not only did his publications publicize the story of a forgotten civil rights leader, it sparked locally grown preservation efforts which have revitalized the Moores' influence in Central Florida.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, Lawton House, Cracker Architecture in Oviedo, Florida.